it up the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Wednesday, the 22nd of April. And we've got a lot on our agenda. I can tell you, obviously, those in the room can probably guess, we're not going to get to all of it today. Our plan is, as we work through this, the last few days, as all committees are, we will roll this over. So things that we don't get to today then are up then on Thursday. And anything that doesn't get done or decided on Thursday, that goes to Monday. And so this is the entire agenda for the rest of this committee on Senate bills, and we'll see what we can do. I'm going to start by trying to get a couple things out of the way that I think should not take much time. And so I'm going to go down and open up a work session on Senate Bill 580. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 580 directs the Oregon Department of Transportation to begin tolling on the Columbia River Crossing Project. You have the Dash 6 amendment, which replaces the measure. It requires the Oregon Department of Transportation to make every effort to enter into intergovernmental agreements necessary to implement tolling on Interstate 5 and 205. These are the highway bridges crossing the Columbia River. It directs ODOT to collaborate on development by January 1st, 2011 of a tolling rate structure to allow for transportation demand management. You also have the Dash 5. Instead of transportation demand management, it says congestion indexing. These are substantially similar amendments, and we have revenue and fiscal impact analysis done for the Dash 6.
Okay, and we're going to move with the Dash 5, which is, as Mr. Timbers, it's just a matter of wording. It doesn't change anything on it.
Mr. Chair.
And just a second, Senator Starr, please, just to correct one thing Mr. Stembridge said, does not begin tolling. That's on the
original, that was the original
bill. That was the original bill. This bill is simply permissive to give the Department of Transportation the tool to enter into agreements with all the other partners once decisions are made so that the department can, in fact, go forward. Okay. Senator Starr, sir.
I move the Dash 5 amendment to Senate Bill 580.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved the Dash 5 amendment to Senate Bill 580. Discussion? Objection? It's ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended by the Dash 5 to Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 580 as amended with the Dash 5 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair, you have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. You'll need to put in that motion.
Thank you.
Does this bill still have to go to Ways and Means?
Under the original writing of the bill is how it was. So I think we should send it to the floor with a request to remove.
So moved.
All right, Senator Starr has moved that Senate Bill 580, as amended by the Dash 5, be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be removed at the request of the committee to the president. Any objections to the motion? So ordered.
You have a carrier? Okay.
Which one of us would like to want to carry the bill?
Okay.
Senator Starr will carry.
One down.
One down.
That's what I'm...
You didn't clear anybody out of the room.
Nobody left.
Let's see what we can do about that.
We're waiting for that bill, I guess.
Okay.
Let me find... Oh, this one won't clear the room. Let's see.
You're welcome. I'm reading the paper today.
Let's open a work session on Senate Bill 269. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I should start right out with the amendment here.
Yeah.
You have the Dash 7 amendment, which is a consensus amendment that adds a legislative policy statement. It replaces utility relocation procedures, and this is all about utility relocations. It requires the utility and public body to coordinate the planning of the highway project to minimize costs. It excludes property owned by the Port of Portland. It allows utilities to seek and receive reimbursement from private parties or customers. It allows telecommunications utility not subject to rate of return regulation to request Public Utilities Commission authorization to recover relocation costs from customers. And it prescribes PUC procedures for determining the level of authorized recovery. You have also the Dash 2 amendment, which includes non-utility telecommunication providers. We have fiscal and revenue statements on the Dash 7 and the Dash 2's minimal expenditure, no revenue.
Okay. Ms. Lang, would you come forward? College, we've heard this bill before. Ms. Lang has been working on this pretty aggressively and want to get a sense of the Dash 7. Oh, and
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jenny Lang. I represent Quest. What you have with the Dash 7s is a consensus. We have gained the go-ahead from the League of Oregon Cities, which had a few minor changes that they wanted to make. And I can point those out to you quickly if you'd like. On page 1, replacing the word in line 19, replacing the word may with would. In line 21, removing the word potentially. On page 2, removing and at line 2, removing the word potentially. And then on page 3, some work that was done with the Public Utility Commission and the League to modify the framework for which, under which non-return patient's utility would be able to seek reimbursement from the PUC. And lines 10, 11, and 12 were removed, and those some of those thoughts combined into B at line 4, which was agreeable to all of the parties. And then lines 14 and 15 were replaced with the language that you see here to a little more clearly identify how relocation costs would be could be recovered through the PUC process.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Lang? Does anyone else wish to comment on the Dash 7 amendments to Senate Bill 269? Okay, I appreciate your hard work on that. I know we have more work to do, and some of these things are difficult to achieve, and I would hope that the discussion will continue with some of the other elements of the original 269 that we haven't been all fine agreement on, but at least we can get this issue, which everyone has said is a very important issue, agreement on some of these, and continue to work on the interim to see if we can resolve some of those other issues, the development issues, et cetera, and would appreciate your continued work on that.
Thank you, Chair Metzger. We'll see that that happens.
And we have a Dash 2 and a Dash 7 amendment to Senate Bill 269.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 269.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 269. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 7 amendment to Senate Bill 269.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 7 amendment to Senate Bill 269. Any discussion or any objection?
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 269 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I think, Senator Schrader, would you carry that bill? You can, Ms. Lang can work with you on maybe.
Gladly. Thank you.
Some of those things. Thank you very much. Okay, now it starts getting fun.
So where are we?
Okay. Was he really on Morris?
Actually, I told Senator Morris that we didn't have it. We probably carried it. If you want, would you like us to contact Senator Morris?
I'm looking for only people have questions, but
I don't think anybody has a question. I think he's also good.
Okay, let's do it. Okay. And what amendment is it?
It's the Dash 4.
Bill we just got to just go ahead.
Let's roll it. Here's the shoulders around it.
It's a Dash 4?
Yeah, We adopted it.
We've already adopted it. Okay. So we just have to move it. Okay. I'm going to open our work session on Senate Bill 915. Mr. Stembridge?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This has to do with local building code enforcement. You have the Dash 4 amendment, which you adopted Monday. It replaces the measure. It requires municipal building inspection penalties to be assessed as civil penalties. It requires that notice to be provided to civil penalty recipients. It specifies the content of the notice. It limits the amount of municipal civil penalty to no more than the amount authorized on the state building code. We just now received the fiscal on the Dash 4. We have a copy available for anybody who wants to see it. It is a fiscal statement.
Thank you.
We were waiting for the statement, so we could not move this bill the other day.
But we have, yes. Okay. Very good.
So.
We've already moved it. You ready for a motion?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 915 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered, Senator Morris, if you're out there in TV land, you get to carry the bill.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
And we're going to wait till tomorrow, right? Yes. If you're here for Senate Bill 867, the accountant bill, we still have to get a revenue statement from the revenue.
A fiscal statement.
That's a fiscal statement from revenue. And we do not have that properly in our possession yet. So that one will be carried over Thursday, so I just don't want you to have to sit at that one if you're involved with that. We have the fiscal, right?
We do, and we have.
Okay, then let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 849. Mr. Stembridge, and we'll be looking at a Dash 5 amendment, which is the same as another amendment that someone has provided to us. But do you need a copy of the amendment?
Is this bill going to Ways and Means, or is it going straight to the floor?
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 849 has to do with audio newspaper service. You have the Dash 5 amendment, which directs the State Library to administer the statewide audio newspaper service. It directs the PUC to transfer to the State Library a donation through the donation fund of the State Library, $70,000 for the 2009-2011 biennium from the Residential Service Protection Fund for the purpose of funding the services. It declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2009. You have, this is the Dash 5, you have fiscal statement and no revenue impact statement on the Dash 5.
Okay. Yes, Senator Starr.
I'll move the Dash 5 and then maybe we can just discuss if
okay.
We need to. I'll move the Dash 5 amendment to Senate Bill 849.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 5 amendment to Senate Bill 849. Discussion on the amendment? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Yeah, I'd move the bill as amended by the Dash 5 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 849 as amended by the Dash 5 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Now discussion.
Senator Starr. I would just say that in conversations with the interested parties, this seems to be the compromise that seems to get most folks comfortable with the one-time appropriation, not ongoing. You know, let's let these folks have this service, but let's figure out maybe a long-term solution during the interim.
Yeah, thanks. Mr. Wolf, would you come forward, please? We had some concerns about this, and I appreciate people working. This is a program that's only been administered from the state on the national for about a few years, and I think the committee was justly moved by concerns of the folks blind or using this service that they may lose that. And I think there was a real concern, obviously, on the committee to try to do something to help that. But I think there was a justifiable issue that we don't know enough information long-term, and working with some of those who had concerns about the issue that we make this a one-time appropriation from that fund and then get our arms around this going forward, which is embodied in the Dash 5. And Mr. Wolf, you were one of those that raised those concerns and would ask your opinion on this Dash 5.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Brant Wolf representing the Oregon Telecommunications Association. We did have some testimony with some concerns, and we recognize the Dash 5s as an acceptable compromise, and we appreciate the effort of everybody, the committee, and yourself, and we no longer object to the bill with the Dash 5 amendments.
Thank you, and thank you for working on this. I think we all want to get there, and there are questions as to how best to fund this, and we don't want people to lose the service while we figure that out. So,
thank you.
Yes, Senator George.
I just would say that obviously I think we all value the program, but I really want to stress the idea that I don't find the nexus here in this particular fund to actually have this go to. I mean, it just seems like it's a stretch to grab these dollars to put it in there. But since there has been a consensus, I'll vote for the consensus. But I really urge the parties to find a source of revenue that has a better nexus than this particular one. So I'll support the bill, but this is a one-time deal for me.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Well, I thank you, Senator. And I understand there's some discussion about that. My own feeling is this is a telecommunications device that is used, which that fund provides. And for blind, this is their telecommunication device to the world, whether it's similar to some of the other things we do. But that is a legitimate concern, and one of the reasons we decided to make just the one-time appropriation until we figure out what is an appropriate way to to ensure that these services for people who are blind get them. And that's, I think, our basic thing. We don't want the service gone between now and the time that we come back in the 2011 session. We want to make sure the services are provided. So I appreciate your support on that. Any objection to, have we adopted the Dash 5?
We did. Yes.
Okay. Any objection to the motion to move the bill to the floor? So ordered. And I'll carry the bill. Okay. Okay, we did 9:15.
You like the fancy equipment we brought today?
Yeah, we got our box. Let's see what we should do next. 34. Let's do, let's open up public hearing on Senate Bill, the last one, Senate Bill 961. This is a replacement of the original bill members with two issues, and I'll kind of stall for Mr. Stanbridge so he can pull it out, as he has no idea the order I'm going in, as you can tell, and that's how it is in the end of our deadline. This has two different issues. It replaces the bill. If you have a copy of the original Senate Bill 961, does not apply. And Mr. Stanbridge, could you talk about the two amendments we have?
The current amendments that are working that we have distributed, we have available for anybody who wants to have them, is the Dash 6 and the Dash 7. The Dash 6 is has to do with dismantlers, vehicle dismantlers, the reorganization of the vehicle dismantler provisions in current law. And the Dash 7 recreates the Pacific Wonderland vehicle registration plates. Both of these issues have been discussed at length in the committee. We do not yet have the fiscal and revenue statements for that you would need to pass the bill out without suspending the rules. So.
Okay. Is there anyone in the audience would like to comment on either Dash 6 or Dash 7 amendments on Senate Bill 961? Okay. Then that's good. So we'll be ready to move that bill when we get the statement. We'll close the work session on 961. And let's open a work session on Senate Bill 825, and I think this will be Senator Starr on deck after Mr. Stanbridge gives us an overview.
Mr. Chairman, the original bill, you had some testimony on it. Was the so-called zebra sticker plate, but you have now the Dash 1 amendment from Senator Starr. Replaces the measure. It requires workers to be present in order for a road construction repair or maintenance area to be classified as highway work zone for the purpose of establishing the amount of a fine for offenses within that work zone.
Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I asked that the Dash 1 amendments be drafted. This is an issue, I think, that's important to Oregonians and to our constituents. Protecting workers in work zones is critically important. These men and women literally put their lives at risk as they work to improve our infrastructure. This is a minor tweak to the current statute. As you know, today, if you are ticketed in a work zone, speeding, changing lanes without signaling, I mean, virtually any traffic violation or infraction, the traffic fines are doubled in work zones, and appropriately so. I think that's an appropriate penalty. The question is that penalty appropriate at 2 in the morning or at midnight when there's nobody working in that work zone? And this would make it explicitly clear that those double fines apply only when you have men and women that are, again, putting their lives at risk working in those work zones. I've seen this personally, and I've had constituents that have experienced this, and I will make just one current example. I'll bring one current example to the committee. Today on Highway 217, there's a highway widening project going on. And I happen to drive that road every day as I drive from Portland to Salem, or drive from my home to Salem every day. And the work zone that the improvement is on Highway 217 heading north, and it's an additional lane that they're creating construction going to the east on 26. When I drive home at 5 o'clock, there's people working there. People are slowing down, taking care. When I leave Salem late at, say, 8 o'clock, there's nobody there. And yet the work zone, the double fines continue to apply.
The work zone also applies to the southbound lanes of 217 where there's nobody working ever. And I just happened to see law enforcement sitting on an off-ramp there with their radar gun heading, pointing toward traffic. I just know that it's an opportunity really for local law enforcement, for state law enforcement to really penalize folks when there's not any danger to the working public. I have talked with the department about these amendments, had no concern raised from ODOT. I have provided these amendments to AGC, and I would expect that AGC would have been here if there was concern from AGC on these amendments as well. So I would appreciate if the committee would adopt the amendments and move this forward. It's a minor tweak. As you can see from the amendment, basically we're deleting five words and adding one. And it appropriately, I think, protects the public. On the other hand, we're not penalizing drivers in a way that it's just adding extra revenue, additional revenue to law enforcement.
Thank you, Senator. We have not heard this amendment before, so I'm going to ask for testimony on this. First of all, I'd like to have someone from the department come forward. There are a couple in the room. I don't know which one would like to come up to discuss this, their view on Senate Bill 961-825 as amended.
Sure.
No one from the department has a comment on it. Okay. Anybody else would like to discuss the amendment to Senate Bill 825? I'm going to take that as no objection. Okay, then we are in work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 825.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 825. Discussion? Objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 825 as amended to Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 825 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Yeah.
Objection? So ordered. Senator Starr will carry. Okay, we got three exciting things left. I think what I will do is, if you are here for Senate Bill 101, greenhouse gases, and I know some people are in the room, amendments are being drafted on that bill to see if there's a consensus that can be reached. But that amendment is pending, and because we have a couple of other issues here, this one will roll over till Thursday. Probably a major topic for Thursday's discussion. So if you have other things you'd like to do, we will roll over Senate Bill 101 till Thursday's agenda. Next, I'd like to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 34. Mr. Stemper.
Mr. Chairman, the Dash 1 and the Dash 2 amendments, which have been distributed, would replace the measure, each of them. And rather than tell you what the original bill was about, I'll just talk about those amendments. The Dash 1 replaces the measure, authorizes increase in employer payroll tax for transit districts from 7/10 to 8/10 of 1% of wages paid. It requires any increase to be phased in over 10 years with a maximum of 2/100 of a percent annual increment. The Dash 2 replaces the measure, deletes the requirement that transit district financing methods be subject to election authorization. We do not yet have the fiscal and revenue statements on both of these measures.
Okay, and colleagues, for the discussion today, and for those in the audience who would have participated in the hearing today, I would like to have our discussion centered around the Dash 1 amendment. It would be the chair's desire that should we go forward, it will be the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 34. I'll ask Fred, Bernie, and Bob to come forward. Quite a combination. Fred, Bernie, and Bob. And then Chris will be next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Fred Hansen, General Manager of TriMet. I'll make just two very brief comments and be happy to answer any questions. You have a letter and an attachment that's been distributed to you. TriMet has been very successful in attracting discretionary federal dollars to be able to help build out our TriMet system, the public transportation system in the greater Portland area. In fact, on average, over the last two decades, we've been able to attract between $80 and $100 million of those discretionary dollars that would have gone to Atlanta, New York City, Denver, someplace else. They have come to Oregon. They've come to be able to produce jobs here, 7,500 jobs over that that life. To be able to continue to be able to be competitive for those federal dollars, we need to be able to show that we have good projects. We can do that easily. We need to be able to show that we have the local match. We also need to show that we can operate whatever it is that we're building for at least 20 years. This bill allows us to be able to do that by that increase. Secondly, we have worked very closely with our business community. As you see from the attachment, those are entities that have lent us their corporate logos to be able to indicate their support for this amendment. These are nine of the 25 largest payroll taxpayers who have so indicated here their support because they know that it is important for the region. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, I think we'll go through the panel and then we can take questions. Who would like to go next?
Okay. Thanks, Fred. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Shiprock, Executive Secretary of the Oregon Building Trades Council. I'm here to offer my support for the Dash 1 amendments. Just a little background for the committee. Right now, you're all painfully aware of the economic situation the state is in. I just want the committee to know the extraordinary partnership we've had with TriMet over many, many years in the construction of their facilities. They've trained almost a disproportionate amount of our apprentices on their projects. They've got some of the highest apprenticeship ratios to journeymen of any owner in the state. They hire locally, local workforce. We've got I would put our local workforce in this type of heavy construction up against any workforce in the world. I live not far from the 205 extension, and I've been in construction for a long time, 35 plus years, and I myself have to marvel at the speed which that light rail is coming together. We're staying on budget, on schedule, and in closing, we support this. We've supported it in the past. It's important that, as Fred mentioned, that we show the federal government we have a real commitment to this, put the money where our mouth is, and just end by saying we want to continue the job creation that we've experienced in all of this work. It's been I wish they were all like TriMet and the projects that we've got. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shipwright. Mr. Bottomley.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Bernie Bottomley, Vice President of Government Relations for the Portland Business Alliance, here in support of the Dash 1 amendments. Just echo the comments of Mr. Shiprack. The Alliance is very supportive of this amendment and this legislation. We value our partnership with TriMet. It's a very close partnership between the business community and the Transit District, really the genesis of the Transit District when Rose City Transit, a private operator, went bankrupt. The business community came forward and said, we can't function in this community without a healthy transit system, and have been very supportive and linked to the Transit District ever since. We have 300,000 trips every weekday on the system, more than 300,000 trips every weekday on the system. Those are our customers, those are our employees, and if those folks were on the roads in single-occupant vehicles, we wouldn't be moving freight around the region. We'd have huge transportation bottlenecks, even worse than we do now. So we see the value in TriMet, both in terms of day-to-day operations, but also in terms of being able to leverage federal funds and make the capital investments and improvements in the district that we've seen over the last number of years. We're very supportive of the Columbia River Crossing, which has a key light rail element to it, and additional operating funds are necessary to make sure that that we can make the representation that Mr. Hansen referred to get those federal funds to build that project. So very supportive, and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Okay, questions from the committee. Senator Starr.
Thank you. I appreciate the panel being here and supporting the bill. I have a question about, particularly about TriMet's operating expenses. And I guess the first question would be to Mr. Hansen, but I'd really like Mr. Bottomley to answer this question as well. You look at the cost to operate transit in Portland as it relates to the number one cost to the agency, or one of the largest costs to the agency is in your payroll to the bus drivers and the costs that are incorporated in that. Is there a plan to negotiate those salary benefits in a way that are more commensurate with other public transit agencies around the country?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chair Starr. We negotiations on a contract. The current contract expires in November 30th. Issues around negotiation are obviously always a sensitive issue. I would say, however, that our benefits, when compared to other transit districts around the country, are very commensurate with that. Some are higher in some regards, such as on the health care side, less so on other issues, such as pension or salary.
Well, I'm not going to get into debate here, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? Mr. Senator George.
Looking at the companies that support, that you guys gave us that support this, they're all the large employers. And from the list, it's either folks who get public dollars from the Treasury or have their businesses guaranteed by public dollars. And so my point is that this list right here are people who are kind of on the dole, if you know what I mean, at least a good portion of them. What if we just made it so the tax only applied to employers over a certain size, like 100 employees? So the big corporations, big companies who are advocating for it could, but for all the small businesses that are really struggling, they wouldn't see a tax increase. Would that be attainable?
Let me do one part of the answer, and then I think maybe Bernie would be best on the rest. It would seem to me that I think you would hear from people such as U.S. Bank that they would not consider that they're on the public dole, even though they have taken
I was careful how I phrased that, so it's not everybody, but but their business is guaranteed by the taxpayers right now. So.
Certain level of deposits are, and certainly the TARP funding has done other things.
It's very convenient when your business is backed by the federal government to advocate for more taxes. That's all I'm saying.
We have always believed very strongly that the fairness issue is one that does demand equity across the board. Bernie?
Senator Metzger, Senator George, we have 1,400 members. The majority of them are small businesses. Many of them are single owner-operated businesses, so they're paying the self-employment tax. And we had quite a number of discussions with our Small Business Council, and there was universal. There's one person who wasn't supportive, but by and large, we had overwhelming support for this among our small businesses.
Mr. Chair, follow
up. Yes, Senator.
I guess here's my point is for a lot of big employers, because they're centrally located, there's a lot of people coming there. Typically, transportation really serves large employers. Take, for instance, like Nike or Intel or those types of things. Small employers tend to be out on the roads, maybe not as easily accessible to. And what I'm trying to say is this is not the time to be raising taxes on small businesses. They're already having a hard time making payroll. And I'm just wondering if this isn't the time we're saying if the big companies really want to be taxed more to pay for this, if we couldn't sort of bifurcate that, since I would argue that they probably get a disproportionate share of sort of transit subsidy.
Chair Metzger, Senator George, I guess in my experience at the Alliance, the feeling is that the Transit District provides service across the board, that it supports not only the movement of customers that patronize small and large businesses, but employees. Small businesses, a lot of them depend on street traffic, on retail, particularly the retail sector, and the healthiest retail districts in the city are those that are supported, strongly supported by transit. we're all working towards sustainability and dealing with global greenhouse gases and how we address that in our regional land use planning structure. And transit is a key component to shaping the development of our city centers. And small businesses are a huge part of creating the vitality in those centers. So we have, you know, across the board support.
Chair Metzger and Senator George, I'd also add that this legislation is very, very clear that in current economic times, we would never consider having this, being able to exercise this authority. In fact, it explicitly requires us to be able to have done independent analysis to determine if, in fact, the economy is sufficiently recovered to be able to justify that. In fact, the last time this was addressed, we had three independent economists produce reports. Extensive reports, John Mitchell, formerly with U.S. Bank, Randy Podzina, and Joe Courtright, really kind of covering the area, the broad breadth of economic views. All three supported it. We would expect that we would do that exact same sort of thing before we'd even contemplate raising any additional tax as a result of this authority.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Chris?
Thank you.
You want to come forward?
Thanks, Bob.
Senator or Chair Metzger, members of the committee, my name is Chris Hagerbaumer. I am the Deputy Director at the Oregon Environmental Council, and I was out of the room when you described the amendments, so I may be slightly off here, but we basically absolutely support the policy proposal of allowing TriMet and Lane Transit District to levy a higher payroll tax in the future when the economy recovers. But we also feel that the bill should facilitate the formation of new transit districts and give all transit districts the authority to levy a payroll tax. And we'd like you to consider the possibility of, in the future, levying a tax on commercial parking spaces. Unlike most other states, Oregon's transit districts don't have that sales tax that other states use to fund transit, so we really need to think of new ways to do so. Public transportation underpins Oregon's efforts to promote economic development and preserve our quality of life. High-quality transit attracts riders and eases highway congestion. Transit-intensive areas have experienced job growth, economic development, and increased property values. And transit serves people not only who choose not to drive, but people who can't afford to drive, and of course people who, because of their age or their disability, are unable to drive. So we've heard from transit districts all over the state about their difficulty in keeping up with the transit needs, and especially the needs of senior and disabled folks. And I've listed a few examples here. When the city of Bend, which started offering transit in 2006, changed to a public demand response system, it found that just in 2 months after the service change, there was a 91% increase in ridership over the previous year. And then in Albany, their paratransit services have seen a 15% increase in ridership over the past two fiscal years. Ted Frazier of the City of Albany told us, "We're currently having to turn down approximately 5 to 10 senior rides per day due to capacity issues in our paratransit program." In the Canby area, the SMART system, Cynthia Thompson, who's the executive director, indicated a strong concern about the limited funding for buses for smaller system. She said that the smaller systems will not be able to meet the increasing demand due to lack of funding for vehicles. A considerable amount of money has been invested in these suburban systems, local, regional, state, and federal dollars, and if we don't preserve and maintain them, they're at risk of failing down the road. So I'm saying here that I don't want these smaller systems to flounder as well, so we want you to think about their needs. And we should be thinking about these other types of sources of funding, and one option that was recommended by the Transportation Vision Committee was to levy a flat fee per space up to 10 cents on commercial parking spaces. Those would be the spaces for employee and customer parking. That revenue could be used for transit and other transportation investments that aren't eligible for highway dollars. So we hope that you will really consider making significant investments in public transportation, facilitating the formation of transit districts around the state, and providing the greater authority to raise needed dollars. These will help transit prevent cuts and help meet future needs, reaping great benefits all across Oregon. Thanks for your consideration.
Thank you. Any questions?
I don't think she mentioned Earth Day.
Oh, yeah, you didn't mention Earth Day. What happened?
It's happening today and every day.
I'm sure you knew.
Today and every
day. Just want to make sure that OEC knew.
Every day is Earth Day.
God. Thank you. Thank you for your comments. And just a couple of things for those who may be listening because don't have amendments. Yes, this covers Lane Transit and TriMet. For those of you in the audience and out there who have been bugging everybody on this committee day in and day out for months about where's the transportation package, this is the first part of the transportation package to be moving as of the next couple of days. So it is starting to go. There is no one else signed up to testify. We don't have a fiscal or revenue statement yet, so this will be rolled over for work session until tomorrow. We'll close public hearing work session on Senate Bill 34. Now, not very many people have left the room. We'll see what happens when we open this one.
We moved all these bills and everybody's still here.
Yeah. Always save the best for last. All right, we'll open up a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 607. And Mr. Stembridge, you can point out that this is a replacement bill and maybe give us a preview. And then we'll go to Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, the Senate Bill 607 has a dash one amendment. The dash one amendment would prohibit counties or cities from replacing existing outdoor advertising signs.
Okay, we also have a dash two. Senator George, which one are we going to be operating under?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess we're going to be, I'm actually have a new set of amendments based off conversations with local governments, and I apologize for that, but trying to move quickly on this.
Well, maybe what we could have you do is address your amendment and then and plus the alterations you would like to make so that at least the audience has a concept of what we're going to be discussing then.
This grew out of a conversation we were having about billboards. Senator Starr raised the question about the property owner who had a sign, was in negotiations with a sign company. The sign company has a disadvantage if the local government had changed the regulation to make the sign a non-conforming land use. So in essence, the land use laws, if they're changed to the local government, changes the negotiation position between the landlord and the sign company. And it seemed like an issue that there was some agreement on, that this inequity is unfair. We quickly, Senator Starr and I kind of discussed it a little bit more, and so we quickly had some amendments drawn up for this bill. I think we had some discussions when the billboard bill went out of here. We had some discussions about how we do this. Came up with the dash ones and the dash twos. They are overly broad, and I think that was due to the fact that we were moving so quickly and weren't able to consider all the issues. So in doing so, I've talked with the counties. I talked with Art Schlack from the counties. Also got a call into the cities. What we're trying to do is basically put a time. What we'd like to do in the next set of amendments, if possible, Mr. Chair, is two things. Number one, we want to take away this unfair negotiation position between the landlord and the sign company that has the state-given right to have the billboard sign up, but the land use right is in essence taken away from the landowner. So what happens is when it becomes a non-conforming use. The way the amendments are drafted currently, that non-conforming use would be, in essence, the cities and counties couldn't ever make it a non-conforming use, and that's not what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is, in that moment of time, between the time I switch between from one company that's leasing my property to another company that's leasing my property, there's a period of time there where the sign is taken down. And what we don't want to do is have the cities or the counties using that opportunity to call it a non-conforming use and take away that right to have the billboard when the intent of the landowner is to actually have a billboard and keep the non-conforming use permanently there. So In the amendments that we have at Legislative Council, we are proposing two changes to the dash ones and dash twos. Number one is that we want the billboard to be pretty much the same size, and we want it to apply narrowly to billboards, not the way the dash twos are drafted. I think it would apply to a much broader group of signs than just billboard signs. So that was drafting error number one. So we want to narrow the definition to these 2,500 sign locations in the state that are currently permitted by the state of Oregon under the billboard regulations. Number two is we want to close the window down so that the landlord or the landowner has only an X period of time to find a new lessee to come in and put the billboard up, so that if I'm negotiating with Company A, who currently has the sign on my property, and they're asking me for a ridiculously low rent, that I can then go to another company and negotiate with them. And if sign company A decides not to sign and agree with me, I can have an agreement for sign company B to immediately come in and put up the new billboard, which is exactly the same. It's just simply who is leasing that spot from me. What we don't want to do is have it as an unending open right that exists with the property forever. What we're trying to do is allow the landowner to have an ongoing non-conforming use as long as he or she does not abandon that use. So that's how the amendments are going to be coming out. So the dash ones and dash twos start us down that path. I'm trying to be in negotiations with local governments to understand that we want to narrowly craft this to fix this individual situation that we heard about during testimony on the other bill.
Thank you, Senator. Thanks for the overview. And for those in the audience and listening, is that this is one of the issues that came up in the interim during the task force. It also came up in testimony on the billboard, the sign task force bill. And one thing, and I was sensitive to the issues that we heard, and that is the unintentional market conditions that are made by things that we do. We talked about relocation credits, which we have not been able to solve that issue, and we'll continue to talk about that going forward, but becomes a property right that the state basically has created, and it's very difficult not to do that. Anytime we put a cap on something, you create something of value. And there's public policy involved in wanting to cap, but it does create a dynamic in the marketplace. And when we heard from someone in the interim and then also on the committee, that now that some cities have changed their ordinances, it changes the negotiation. You know, and it seemed like with some of the information that was provided us, letters from some of the companies, it seemed like they were taking advantage of an ordinance to have an unfair discussion. And so I said I would be open on that issue to even that playing field, if it is, as it were, so that this would not create any more billboard credits, but if someone had a credit, they could come in and take that. And my feeling is that would create a detente that essentially would not allow that to happen, and that you would have a fair negotiation between the landowner and the billboard company if they knew that they didn't have an ordinance to fall back on, that someone else could come in and take that spot. So I appreciate you working on that. And we'll need those amendments as quickly as we can possibly get them, but at least you have a context of what Senator George is trying to do. So I'm going to ask Joe Weston, Chris Doherty, and Arthur Pazuzzi, who are advocates, to come forward, and then we'll go down our list of those who have signed up in opposition.
Oh, go ahead.
Who is going to kick us off?
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Joe Weston. I'm the owner of Weston Investment Company and American Property Management, located in Portland, Oregon. I'm here to speak in support of Senate Bill 607-2. I believe officers and employees of my company has testified on various other Senate bills affecting outdoor advertising signs in the past. When I started my company 50 years ago, it was a very small company. We are a privately held company, and with the loyalty of many employees over many years, we have grown in size. Myself and my employees hold sacred the private property rights of real estate ownership. In the past years, I used to personally deal with the various outdoor sign companies. I remember dealing with a man by the name of Mr. Murphy who worked with Foster and Kleiser. And as you may not know, Foster and Kleiser is actually the granddaddy of the outdoor billboard. They started in 1901, and over a lot of years, the firm is now known as Clear Channel, and they acquired. Over the past 20 years, things have changed. The outdoor sign industry has, through mergers and acquisition, allowed one company to become dominant, which makes it difficult for the smaller outdoor sign companies to maintain and grow through the acquisition of a new sign location or replacement signs in their present location. The dominant sign company is now in a position to dictate as to what they feel the sign location is worth and does not allow open economic free market negotiation to determine the actual fair market value of the sign location. The position of the dormant outdoor sign company is, this is what we'll pay you. If you don't agree, we'll take the sign permit, we'll move the outdoor sign off your property, and no other sign company can come because they cannot obtain a permit. 30-some years ago, I purchased the old former Dornbecker Furniture Factory, which is located at Northeast 28th and I-84 in Portland. At the east end of that large six-story building, there has been a wall-scape painted sign, which has been on the building for a number of years. A few years ago, we elected at the time of lease renewal to obtain competitive bids, resulting in giving the sign rights to another company. This caused a major concern, which resulted in a number of judicial hearings prior to our right of signing on our own building being established. We refused to simply walk away. We felt it was important to defend our rights of signage on our own building and property. My goal in appearing before you today is a long-term private property rights and the ability of both the property owner and the outdoor sign company the right to negotiate the replacement of an existing sign and not be held hostage by Relocation Credit Bank, which benefits the dominant sign company. I ask for your support in the passage of Senate Bill 607-2. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Weston. It's good to see you. I haven't seen you for a long time. And have you seen our good friend Don Pollock at all recently?
Oh, yes. Talked to him last week.
No, good. Good to see you. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
Mr. Doria, are you next?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. Senator George, I want to thank you for the work that you've been putting into Senate Bill 607-2. I am in support of Senate Bill 607-2. I'm also very open to see what the next amendments will be. I understand that the difficult nature of putting all of this together so that it works harmoniously for everyone. I would like to also have one comment about 607-2, as long as you are looking at it. My interpretation of reading Section 2.2, if I'm correct, the intent of the term same materials will eventually mean comparable materials. For example, if it's a wood structure would be replaced, or if it was a steel structure would be replaced. A single face would be a single face sign, comparable, rather than maybe the literal term exact same materials, which would mean the materials that were owned by the previous sign owners would actually have to be going back on the property, which would essentially moot the whole point. So if we could get some clarification to that point, that would be helpful as well. I think my entire testimony today was to speak to how I view Senate Bill 607-2 in relation to some existing statutes, such as ORS 215.130, which is the county's non-conforming statutory law. I think that the spirit and intent of 607-2 is very close, runs very close to what the counties adhere to, and in many places, counties are much easier to work with for this situation than we find in the local cities. It is the local cities that become truly difficult. Included as part of the testimony, I have given you as an example two city regulations dealing with non-conforming signs. And what you can see here, the first one is the City of Portland. The City of Portland has told me as a matter of their policy that they look to see the removal of non-conforming signs happen through the new development of property. However, their current interpretation of this code is that an existing non-conforming sign can be removed for the purpose of maintenance or other things like that as long as it's removed only by its owner, current owner, and replaced by its existing owner. So they are very close Almost. If they would have an interpretation that, that the sign could be removed for a change of tenancy or a change of ownership, that it'd be solved. So they're there, they're just not there. I think it's important to know that you're not asking them to substantially change their overall policy goals. Same as with the City of Gresham. You can see in their non-conforming section, they say on-site or off-site repairing or restoring of any part of a sign or sign structure to a safe condition. They also have a current interpretation that that must be of the existing owner, sign owner. So we're not asking for huge changes to their policy goals. And then I think finally is that it's just very true that a Senate Bill 607-2 would provide immediate relief and options for landowners in Oregon currently frustrated by this issue of obtaining local permits for replacement signs. To a smaller extent, it will help with the issue of relocation credit ownership, in that at least in that pool they have everyone to look to. While Senate Bill 607-2 does not cure the whole issue of the relocation credits and the frustrations that are caused by both state and local, it does get us in a large step in the right direction. And I again thank you for your work on that, and look forward to seeing the amendments for that bill in support.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
my name is Art Pascuzzi, and I'm appearing today in support of Senate Bill 607-2. Chairman Metzger and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to address you this afternoon and express my full support to Senate Bill 607-2. My brother Pasquale appeared before you at a previous hearing in March 26th and discussed with you the deep frustrations he has had with the way existing sign owners on our property in Portland is utilizing the local and state outdoor advertising sign regulations to subvert our attempts to lease our property for this type of use at amounts and on terms that we find reasonable and acceptable. Admittedly, I am not as close to the discussion as my brother, but when I say to him, just go out and replace the sign owner to lease the property, Pasquale tells me that the existing sign owner has stated that if we do not agree to the terms of the lease they have offered, they will remove their sign and a replacement sign would not be allowed. As you can imagine, this puts us in a very difficult situation and is the cause of this frustration. Our family has owned this particular piece of property since 1945, when it was the home of Milwaukee Machinery. The company was founded by my father. And through it is our home. It is not the home of, although it is not the home of our company today, it is still a piece of property which we held in family and maintained since that day. We simply want the right to continue to maintain the outdoor advertising sign use on this property as we have for the past years and on terms which we believe are reasonable and competitive. In the case of outdoor advertising signs, the tenant generally owns the sign, and so when a landowner wishes to effect a change in tenancy, the existing sign must be removed by its owner and a comparable replacement sign must be placed on the property by a new sign owner. While Senate Bill 607-2 does not address the monopoly issue related to state relocation credit, it certainly does provide immediate relief and some necessary options for the landowner. We certainly hope a solution to the relocation credit issue is not a loss cause, as it has ultimately just as important, but we are very encouraged by the direction of the Senate Bill 607-2. We thank you for its consideration and request that you support passing this bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Pascuzzi. Question, Senator George.
My intent in drafting amendments is that the landowner is not abandoning the conditional use. And so in this new set of amendments, I really want to tighten this up so that it has to be a very short period of time between the time that you get rid of one tenant and replace it with a new tenant. Do you have any problem at all about tightening this up to make it easier for the cities to and the counties to deal with? Because I do not want to, I don't want this to stretch out. So do you have any problem with tightening that up so that it's an immediate exchange of signs, in essence?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, not at all. I think that's that from a standpoint of administration is ultimately necessary. What I would like to have taken into consideration is the time frames, maybe 12 months or no shorter than 6 months, simply because the time that it takes to complete negotiations, you have to honestly and faithfully negotiate with your existing tenant, and then at some point that cuts off, which means they have to have time to remove their structure. Then you have to have time to complete negotiations with a new tenant and submit permit applications locally and then potentially to the state. That in the state of Oregon, they have up to 120 days. The state really, I think, has 60 days now. So it could be 180 days just to get permits.
Okay.
It's going to take 30 days to order a structure, another 30 days to construct. So within those reasonable time frames, absolutely.
Yep. Thank you very much.
I would concur on that. In larger cities, we have neighborhood associations, and this being a conditional use is a land use issue. Mm-hmm. It goes through a bureaucracy of hearings and things. So it can't be done very quickly. I would advocate no less than 9 months, but a year would be reasonable.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for that input. Any other questions for our panel? Thank you, gentlemen. Garnet Archer, Asher, Marcia K. Whitelock, and Robert Erickson.
Thank you, Senator Metzger and committee. I'm Garnet Asher, Oregon State Federation of Garden Clubs. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 6072 proposed amendments should not be supported as it removes the original intent of the bill. Oregonians do not need, nor do they want to install any electronic billboards. These signs do not enhance the beauty of Oregon's scenic byways. No person can drive safely and view an electronic billboard message, which changes every few seconds. During the past energy crisis, Governor Tom McCall decreed that the outdoor lighted advertising should be turned off, and public supported his successful action. Let us learn from the past and stop unneeded energy use by electronic billboards. I also have a report from Lynn Chiodi, Chairman of the Legislative and Governmental Affairs from Oregon State Garden Clubs, to read.
I would prefer you not read it. We do have that because I have a lot
of. Do you have a copy of it?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. But thank you.
Chairman, we'll be sure and make it part of the record.
Yes, it will be part of the record. And just I want to make a comment because your testimony is talking about electronic billboards, and this amendment does not deal with electronic billboards. Mm-hmm. It is dealing only with the replacement of an existing sign in the same manner of what that sign was. It does not venture into that issue at all.
Excuse me, then I think we are being given some erroneous information.
Yeah, I think you're talking about some elements of the original bill. And that's understandable, ma'am, because people don't have a chance to see this, is why we're having the hearing today.
But we are heartened that the committee is listening to the citizens' concerns regarding the permits becoming assets. We encourage you to pursue that issue.
Yeah, we're trying to work on that. And I sure appreciate all the support of the garden clubs and the consensus that we were able to reach that we've already passed out and talking about these other issues and your support of trying to, especially on the helping to provide incentives to clean up the scenic byways. And that legislation's moving forward, and we appreciate your help on that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
Senator Metzger, Marcia K. Whitelock.
I do have a question then. Are we going to address the LED digital billboards at some point?
Not in this session. We don't think there is. We're not moving forward on that issue. As we discussed in the interim, there's a lot more work and studies that we have to have. And so we have listened to the concerns of all, and we're staying away from that issue until we have more information.
Okay. I do want to go on record, though, that I do oppose the amendment to SB 607.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman and distinguished representative of the voters, my name is Bob Erickson. I'm here before you to request your consideration and support of the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 607. It is my belief this amendment will level the playing field for company or for property owners when negotiating in good faith with sign companies. Under the present bill, at the time of negotiation or renegotiation for existing signs, a sign company may threaten to relocate the sign, thereby avoiding the owner's conditional use permit. This situation leaves the property owner with the loss of income from his property. The sign company maintains its relocation credits, yet loses nothing. The government has created a subverted unequal bargaining position for the property owner, an unlevel playing field. To reinstate, the property owner should not lose their conditional use permit, thereby the revenue for their property when the sign company threatens to relocate. We individuals should not lose our income based on the government's broad brush strokes dealing with big business. Please support the amendments to Senate Bill 607. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Any questions for any of our panelists? Thank you all for coming. Okay, well, let's hear from the other side. Mr. Sandblast, Zukin, Mr. Colvin.
Oops. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Terry Sandblast. I'm the president of the Oregon Outdoor Advertising Association. When will the Dash 3 amendments be available to read?
Mr. Chair, I'm hoping these come out of LC pretty quick. I mean, I've been working with Heidi on that, so we
don't know. I would hope by sometime tomorrow morning.
Oh, okay, but so there'll be a future hearing.
And what we'll do is, just for the record, Senator George, as soon as those amendments are ready, since you authorize them, if you could see that Mr. Stembridge gets them so that anybody who wants them can get them as fast as we get them, that would be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll make my comments because I prepared those in response to 607-2. Of course, depending upon what 03 is, some of those comments may not be as viable as they are as to 02. The association believes that 607-2 will result in proliferation of billboards by allowing replacement of all nonconforming signs along state routes. We think that this replacement would jeopardize the 10% of the state's federal highway funding if viewed by the Federal Highway Department as not being effective control of outdoor advertising on the state routes. We believe, too, that 607-2 will eliminate the incentive to remove billboards from the scenic areas, as that incentive was provided for in Senate Bill 689. And that's because you would not be removing a nonconforming sign. You would be replacing it at the same location on that scenic area. So that's a concern. We also believe that owners of commercial property under Measure 37 had the opportunity to seek development redress from government, that Measure 49 eliminated that opportunity. However, because our state constitution prohibits content control, commercial property owner is allowed to have an outdoor advertising sign provided it complies with local sign regulations relating to size, height, placement, the time, place, and manner kinds of constructs. The issue here before you is a state permit. Property owners are allowed to have signs for compensation. That's how the Constitution is interpreted by the Supreme Court. We believe that there's a major policy issue created by 607-2. It runs counter to the basic concept that cities and counties are required by the state to develop comprehensive plans and regulations, including sign regulations, designed to implement those plans reflective of the local identity and compliance with state-mandated guidelines. To follow up, and it kind of follows up with your dash 3 proposal, to accomplish the focus, which I believe is of 607-2, the association is willing to meet to discuss alternatives and bring forward a resolution with regard to those issues during the next session. I'm not quite sure we would have a productive bill without a lot of unintended consequences. The association is in support of regulation, effective regulation, and we want to see that there would be an equitable distribution of that regulation for all parties involved. We are not favorable to a system that will, in fact, cause the great proliferation of outdoor advertising, which is counter to the program and to the state's goal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sambles. Who's next?
Question.
Oh. No, we'll just go through the whole panel.
My name is John Zukin. I'm a partner in Meadow Outdoor Advertising out of the Dalles, Oregon. Senator Metzger and the committee, our company, strongly opposes 607-2. First and foremost, we see a number of, once again, this word being used a lot in Senate Bill 689 and this bill. The reason we're even talking about it now is the unintended consequences of what happens when laws are made. We think that there would be a windfall of more. Meadow Outdoor operates in Portland. I heard some testimony that made me make a quick note. We operate in Portland along with CBS Outdoor Advertising, Ramsey Sign Company, Lamar Outdoor Advertising, Clear Channel. There's a lot of competition in the city of Portland. And I know there's some other sign owners in the city of Portland who I didn't just name that actually have off-premise sign permits. So there's a lot of competition and a lot of different people talking to a lot of landowners. As worded, Senate Bill 607-2 potentially negates Senate Bill 689-A's efforts to reduce the number of signs along scenic byways. Just by the way it's worded, where you're going to continue as with what Mr. Sandblast said, a proliferation just in the scenic byway itself. Also, as worded, Senate Bill 607-2 would create loopholes similar to those exploited by unscrupulous companies taking advantage of legally challenged ODOT regulations. These are out-of-state companies that are looking for a way to come in to the state of Oregon and get rid of one of the best working federal and state billboard regulation laws in the country. And this is just one more attempt. 607-2 circumvents local zoning ordinances, which could cause far-reaching negative consequences in every local zoning authority in the state of Oregon, i.e. litigation, proliferation of billboards, etc. I think my last comment is I do want to say, it is highly unfortunate to hear of a couple, the same ones I heard during Senate Bill 689's testimony, a couple of unfortunate circumstances that a couple of landowners had due to probably one of the most highly regulated industries in the state. And when you regulate any industry, there are going to be a couple of consequences that do affect just a few. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon. Chris Colvin, Vice President and General Manager of Lamar Advertising, Eugene, Oregon. I'll be short and sweet as I was last time. Senator Metzger, committee members, Lamar Advertising opposes Bill 607-2 as it's worded, going right in line with their theme. We feel it's going to lead to proliferation. Thank you.
Yeah.
Of the outdoor advertising structures in the state.
I came here in July of 08, and it was kind of my understanding that one of the goals was to try to essentially clean up, at least from the Lamar standpoint, clean up some of the structures that we had that weren't viable, maybe build in some of the scenic byways, try to work with the state, and I feel that this this bill is going to go against the grain in doing that. So, I just wanted to go on record and state that we, as 607-2 is proposed, we are vehemently against this bill.
Thank you. I just had a couple of questions, and I'll open up to others. Number one, in Senator George's redo of his amendment, your point on the scenic byway, the language is correct, and I know that wasn't the intent, and the new amendment will exclude scenic byway removal from these provisions so that incentive remains, which is our intent. The other thing is, I'm just, maybe one of you can explain this to me, and we'll have Ms. Joyce up next from the department to shed some light on this, but when you talk about proliferation of billboards, because we're capped at a certain number, you still have to have a permit to put that up again. So if you could give me your analysis of why you think that would happen, because my own thought is, and you can react to this, and I'm just going to use the city of Portland as an example, because that's where a couple of people have talked from. Here in Portland, you have a very good desirable sign, and someone is trying to put you into a lease that is not favorable, but kind of has you in the corner because of the land use decision. My feeling would be is that I'm the sign company. I really don't want to abandon that position, that location. I just want to get a better deal for me, and my customer doesn't have much choice. But if I knew that CBS could come in right behind me, Mr. Clear Channel or whoever, then, well, I don't want them to take my spot. So chances are I'm not going to do that, and I'm just going to have a more fruitful negotiation as opposed to remove my signs because I know I can't come back into the city of Portland and put one anywhere. So if you could help me with that analysis.
I think Senator Metzger, if he could reserve that question to perhaps, I think Brad Parsons, our general manager, could address that issue.
Okay.
But it's a two-way street, quite honestly. Sure, some folks have testified that we're trying to raise the or lower the rates to better ourselves. But on the other side, those folks who are sophisticated enough to know that you can't rebuild can ask exorbitant lease costs, which makes your sign location an unproductive revenue source. So therefore, you're required, in that concept, to remove your sign. It's a business decision. So it's a two-way street. It's not just one side. It's not the big, bad billboard company taking advantage of the small private business owner who may be unsophisticated or may be very sophisticated, dependent upon the circumstances. It's a negotiated circumstance. And so the reality is the sign, you would want to keep your sign there. But there's a business equation there that comes into play as to what it is that will trip that bright line and say we can't afford to stay there. And I'm not the general manager of the company, so I shouldn't be responding to it. But that's what I think is what's going on. And so it's a two-way street.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Senator George.
I'm trying to get at this proliferation issue that you...
Okay,
let me explain real quick. You have to have a state permit to have a billboard, and so we're trying to get at that. Right now, all the companies have banked a bunch of additional permits. This doesn't deal with that at all. This deals with somebody who currently has a non-conforming use on their property. When it's removed, another non-conforming use comes in. It's just a replacement sign, so there's no additional proliferation. It seems like to me the proliferation in your industry is all of these unused credits that are in the bank that your companies are seeking to go cite. If you want to talk about proliferation, we're talking about replacement signs here, and I'm not quite getting your argument because if you all were in favor of non-proliferation of signs, you all would give up all of your credits that you currently have in the bank and turn them over to the state, and I doubt you're all going to do that.
Well, you never know.
I'm sure the Garden Club would really appreciate that. We strike
we'll
a deal now.
Off.
I mean, we put in the amendments if you like. I mean,
well, you know, in looking at 607-2, I mean, I haven't seen your dash 3, so it may change the equation somewhat. But In your 607-2, it's very unclear as to the requirement of a state permit, even as it was under 607-1. It wasn't clear that you're still required a state permit. And so if you're on a state route,
well,
and an existing sign comes down, that sign goes into the state bank. Okay? From the positions of 607-2-1, it looked like there's an automatic gifting of a replacement sign.
Gotcha.
In that sense, you've just doubled the number of billboards in the state. That's the concept. And when I looked at what the impact would be on the scenic routes, that's exactly where I was coming from. Because all of a sudden, the incentive program lets you take one down and move it around, and then that property owner where you took it down puts it right back up in the scenic route. So it's pretty clear in that sense. Now, with your dash three, if things are more spelled out so that it can be comprehended, maybe these positions aren't the same. But that's where our take is at.
Mr. Chair, I think if you look at the statutes, it's clear that it's connected to the permit, but I will make sure that Legislative Council clarifies that this doesn't. There's no additional permits issued, because that's definitely not the intent.
I'd like to go on the record that Lamar is one of the companies that has very few bank permits, less than a dozen. As the economy, if it continues to grow, may grow, and my bank permits may grow because I may be forced to take some structures down. But as it is right now, we do not have many bank permits at all. We are on the outside looking in when it comes to that, and I still would oppose the 607-2 as it is.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Amy Joyce spends all of her day basking in the glory of the world of outdoor advertising.
Living the dream, Chairman.
Living the dream. Ms. Joyce, a couple of things we would like. Obviously, your perspective on the amendment, and it's a work in progress, as you know. So also direction on intent versus what you think language, some of the questions that were brought up, as well as your opinion on it, is welcome.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Amy Joyce, Department of Transportation. I've actually got some written testimony I'll hand in just real quickly. But I think what I'll skip to is what you asked, Chair Metzger. My reading of the dash two, I think maybe there are some misconceptions about it, what it does and doesn't do, and I'll give you my perspective as the person who implements the Motorist Information Act for the state. One of the things the state law requires when folks come to me with a permit application to get a state permit for a sign, the local jurisdiction has to sign off right on our application form saying, you know, complies with local code. That isn't the end of the story, however. You've got the two different layers of regulation. So wherever you've got a state highway, you've got to meet the state's regs and also the cities or the counties. And if it doesn't meet either one, you don't get your state permit. So the 377-740 that's cited there in Section 2, that's the provision of the law that says that nothing prohibits a local government from sort of layering on more regulation. The state law doesn't preempt. So you've got to meet both levels of code. So if folks walked in with an application form that said that under this new provision, landowners, you know, their sign's okay even though it wouldn't have been under the city's code, if it's not conforming to state code, the law still requires that I deny that permit. And as I read this, this is all inserted in part into the portion of ORS, that's the Oregon Motorist Information Act, the state code that regulates specifically state highway state controlled routes and requires a permit on an outdoor advertising sign. So as I read the dash twos, it doesn't get anybody out of needing to get a state permit. It doesn't get anybody out of showing up with one of those relocation credits. It doesn't exempt that. All I see this doing is saying that, you know, a sign that's nonconforming under city code, that's not going to stop somebody from getting a state permit. if it's nonconforming under state code, I still can't write that permit. And it's a really important distinction because that's when you get into that potential federal penalty, the 10% of highway funds that we estimate at about $30 million a year in lost highway funds. So if it had anything in there like that, I'd be expressing real strong concerns from the department. But I don't think that the Dash 2 requires that. I think it's a simple administrative change we would make at the department. There's no fiscal to it for us. It's a strong policy decision, obviously, for the committee. But that's what I think the Dash 2 does. And I also think it also only applies to outdoor advertising signs, which is the term we use that usually means billboards. But billboards isn't actually a term that's used in the statute. So this really is just directed at outdoor advertising signs, not all signs. So.
Thank you, Ms. Joyce. So just to clarify then, to get to the point that some of the issues that were brought up is that you believe that if someone has put up a sign that is nonconforming to state rules, we're not preempting that.
Right. They still wouldn't get a new permit.
It is, because that's. I know what Senator Durst is not trying to do that. He's trying to do that with the city or county that's changed their underlying and trying to create a market dynamic here as opposed to a way out for that. It's an interesting issue. Senator George.
Amy, as we're working on this, one of the issues brought to me by local governments, I was trying to get them quickly these amendments and get comments back. They were concerned that the way the amendment was drafted, and you may have just answered it, would apply to any kind of sign. Like if they put a sign out for their business, that this may overrule their ability to replace that sign. And I don't want to do that. I'm really aiming at those that are connected with the permits and the relocation credits that you, I want it narrowly defined to those types that you regulate there within the relocation credits and the permits.
Chair Metzger, Senator George, and I think it is narrowly tailored to that.
Okay.
The use of the term outdoor advertising sign, that's the word for, or the phrase for those signs that need a state permit, which are typically billboards, but not always.
Okay, thank you.
Good. Any questions? Thank you for shedding some light on that. Peter Garrison, Rich Gaston, Art Schlack. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Peter Carlson.
Oh, Carlson, thank you.
Call my name first, sorry.
Yes, you're next.
Good afternoon, Chairman Metzger, members of the committee. My name is Peter Carlson, Carlson Sign Company, Bend, Oregon. Carlson Sign was established in 1948. I'm a third-generation owner of that business. We operate outdoor advertising signs in Central Oregon in Madras, Redmond, Bend, Lapine, and Prineville. We also manufacture signs, on-premise signs, if that's the old language, for customers throughout the western United States. Currently employ about 28 people. As written, Dash 2, Carlson Sign does not support the 607-2 amendment. I kind of prepared some comments that I've retracted from, I guess, with some of the discussion that's taking place here, but I've kind of been thinking as we've been going here, so if you'll bear with me. I'd like to point out that we currently have no permits in the bank. We've utilized permits in the past, particularly when the Bend Parkway was built. We'd had to take signs down and relocate signs as that project came to completion. It's been my experience that advertising permits and businesses have been bought and sold in Oregon rather frequently throughout the years. There's examples of that in this room. So this is a business that is transferable. If a property owner wants to buy a permit and a sign, we come to a price, and it's pretty simple. The idea, and I don't know the specifics of the circumstances that the gentleman spoke before me, that the property owner is in a increasingly has less advantage in the negotiation, to me, is it doesn't make sense. To me, a landowner has an increasing stronger position with respect to if a sign becomes nonconforming, then that sign really can't be moved or it can't be replaced. And if you attempt to go through the process of getting local permits and state permits and relocating a sign. The sign company, like me, takes it, has to have a pretty bad disagreement or a bad negotiation with the current landowner to go and remove my sign and try to find someplace else to put it. In particular, in the cities, most of the cities where I operate, the situation is capped. So there's a capped number of signs in Redmond, for example. So there's no opportunity to expand the number of business or outdoor advertising signs that occur there. So I just think it's doubtful that the sign company would remove the sign from the landowner unless the landowner is asking for something where that leaves no margin in the business. And the way I'm listening to this, it sounds like the landowner, a knowledgeable landowner that knows all of the industry and how this all takes place and how difficult it is to obtain a new permit, could force a taking of my permit. So basically he says, you're paying me $4,000 a year now and I want you to pay me $14,000. So I say, well, I'm not going to do that. So he says, okay, well, then you're gone, and then he has the right to relocate or to reconstruct a sign. And we have, since the early 70s and since the OMIA started, or the Lady Bird Johnson Highway Beautification Act, we have a pretty big investment in maintaining these permits and abiding to the laws that govern our state. So to me, this thing is giving a landowner the ability to say, I'm going to price you, make it so you cannot operate and sell advertising on my property anymore. I'm going to do it, and remove me from that business. Those are my observations.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Rich Gaston. I'm with CBS Outdoor. Our company's been in legal and ethical operation in Oregon since the 1930s. I am a real estate rep with my company, so I have day-to-day experience in Oregon and Washington with this business. I'd like to make 3 points. The first is there's active competition for landowners today. In the last 12 months, I've successfully concluded 4 different leases in the city of Portland, all of which exist in a non-conforming state. With our landowners, you have to understand, we're in the same boat. I'm not threatening them, and they're not threatening me. We both are threatened by the city of Portland and what they've decided to be as their code. They have the right to set a non-conforming standard. They have a right to improve the built environment, or how they see as improving the built environment in Portland. We all react to that. You have a situation where you have a building that has parking in front. They now want parking in back. So should that situation be rectified by state law? No, the city has that ability and has that right, and we have the competition today. We're actively negotiating, and our landowners work with us, and we work with them. And just to give you an example of how this comes down in terms of economics for a lot of our landowners, I occupy, on average, 9 square feet of a person's property, possibly a multi-acre property. For that 9 square feet, and I visit you maybe once or twice a year, and climb up the pole, change the copy, and climb down and go away, I'm going to be giving you a check in the bank, you don't have to lift a finger, of excess of $50,000 to $60,000, $70,000 in some cases for Portland properties. So, in that scenario, 9 square feet, and I might be giving you $70,000 a year in rent for you not having to do anything, they look at it and say, that's a pretty fair deal. And so we're able to successfully conclude our negotiations. Landowners are fine, we're happy, and the business continues. This has been going on for decades, and it does not require any kind of fix in our estimation. And my second point, this challenges the very concept of nonconforming use and the abilities of cities and counties to set the standard for their own communities. This is a dangerous road to go down. What would be next for the state of Oregon, and what kind of precedent does this set from your committee going forward to say to the cities and counties, we will now state and amend and abrogate your right to set conforming and nonconforming standards in one built environment? What's next? There could be an extension of this to other aspects of the built environment coming from Salem down, and that's not the tradition of our state government. The third point, the advocates of these changes are out-of-state companies seeking to spend and lobby their way into public policy. This has been going on for years, and all it is just constantly creating confusion, creating all kinds of excess costs for the state, and meanwhile, the companies that are legally and ethically operating continue to pay the fees that run the programs and employ people and help the businesses in this state advertise their businesses. In some cases, the companies that come from out of state engage in tortious interference of the established leases in Oregon. This happened during that quote-unquote lawless period. It happened to me. It happened to my company. The result of this bill will be a dramatic and uncontrolled chaos in our ability to do business. This will eventually lead to increased costs to advertisers. I would also say you run a risk of landlord beware, because as we've just heard, the process will be, okay, I'm not going to agree with you on the rate that CBS Outdoor has offered as a best and final offer on an existing sign that I have on your property. The next result in my business will be to terminate that lease and send a crew out to take that sign down. It's gone. Now a clock starts ticking. Good luck, Mr. Landowner, in obtaining all of your permits in some kind of time frame. And if you can't, if that out-of-state person who happens to be similar to a subprime salesperson has been really good and silver-tongued in talking you into the fact that, oh, yes, we can absolutely permit this. This is a slam dunk. Oops, we had no idea that we have an interchange rule in the state of Oregon that you no longer comply with because things have changed. So you can't, unfortunately, after 90 days of hand-wringing, get your permit. That landowner has now lost a huge economic asset, and that is a permanent loss. So be very, very, very careful about trying to advocate for landowners' rights and putting into a situation where we've got the Wild West and folks coming in actually having unintended consequences of these actions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gaston. Mr. Slack.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties. I feel like I'm at a fight at the OK Corral here in a way, but let me just say on behalf of the association, our concerns that we've expressed to Senator George with regard to the Dash 2 center around really the local control and the spectrum of the nonconforming uses and the ability of counties to make the determination as they look at their comprehensive plan and the development of a community, how it ought to grow and how it ought to look at this point. And we are extremely concerned when the state looks at actions that would reduce or remove local decision making and local authority at this point. The Dash 2s, in our opinion, do that, and so we offer our concern with respect to those. I have had some conversations with Senator George, and he has thrown out some ideas, and those ideas are yet to be, put on paper so that we could take a look at those and vet those with some of our counties to see what their response would be. Ideas about narrowing the scope of the issue, I would only add to that by saying I think this is something that is rather detailed. And I'm wholly in hope that given the limited time that we have a good understanding of what we're looking at and that there are not unintended consequences that we have to correct at some point in time. So with that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would express our, interest in working on this item should the committee wish to continue. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have one question for you, Mr. Slack. It is an interesting position that, and I will use the nonconforming use, use the City of Portland as an example since two of the witnesses were from Portland, is that in the regulations for Portland, for Gresham, which was presented, they allow for signs to go down. They recognize that this is a nonconforming use that can be continued, and things can actually come down. But what is interesting is you have a sign company who owns the sign, and then you have the land owner. And it just seems like kind of interesting when the nonconforming use applies to the restrictions on the landowner. And yet, the nonconforming use is allowed to be maintained by the sign company as opposed to the land, the person who actually owns the land. It just seems like it's, you know, backwards. The nonconforming uses usually apply to actions of the landlord, not of someone else who came in. And so that a nonconforming use could be maintained by an outside entity when most things are specifically given or taken from the landowner themselves. Does that, you know, make sense to you? I mean, it's an unusual thing that you can continue a nonconforming use, but it's a contract between that government entity and the sign company, when you think it would be a nonconforming use would be a contract of conformity or violation with the landowner, because just about everything else applies to the landowner.
Chair Metzger, this is a rather unique situation, I would say, as it relates to land use, because the use of land is tied to the land itself. The sign sits on the land, and the nonconforming use as it relates to land use runs with the land. So when the sign comes down, it's no longer in existence. You know, that's what we look at as being, you know, it runs with the property at this point. It just so happens in this situation, I guess, is that you have the sign itself is owned by the structure is owned by another party at this point. And in land use, planning and zoning and that, we look at the use and the land itself, not necessarily if you were like a condominium situation. We look at the structure on the land. We don't look at the use of the structure within a building at this point. So it is rather interesting relationship at this point. But it's private business at this point, which we try not to, in the land use area, try not to get involved in the relationships between landowner and tenants and those kinds of things.
It's fascinating. Senator George.
Thanks. Art, I appreciate your comments on all this and help on this. One of the discussions you and I had was about how broad this bill was, and you and I both wanted to tighten this up to specifically deal with the billboards regulated by the Department of Transportation. You heard Amy Joyce from the DOT's comments on that. Are you satisfied that this is narrowly drafted enough not to apply to normal business signs or things like that?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, I would want a county attorney to take a look at that also at this point, a county land use attorney. My initial read was a little bit broader than what was suggested by the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you all.
Thank you.
We have two left to testify, Brad Parsons and David Barenberg. I guess it's just you.
Of course it is. Chair Metzger and members of the committee that are left, I won't waste a lot of time coming up here. I'm Brad Parsons. Oh, I'm sorry. Brad Parsons, Division President for Clear Channel Outdoor in Portland. We are opposed to 607-2, and I don't need to go into the details for that. You've heard enough today on a lot of those type of reasons. A couple of things I would like to point out. Over the last, probably, I've been here since 2006 when I came to town, and Clear Channel purchased Accurately Media, AK Media, back in 2002. So I've been involved in this for about 2.5 years in the state. A couple of comments I would like to make is that we hear a lot of testimony about being held hostage. I think that Mr. Carlson, that was just up here, handled that exactly right. There's been a lot of, I've heard over the last 2 years through our task force meeting, you know, Clear Channel, our company, myself personally, you know, with some negative comments. I'm not here to defend those, but I would like to ask that if the committee was interested in a different opinion on those particular issues, I would make myself available at any time to answer those, because there is another side. We hear today also that companies lose nothing. I believe Senator George, you had said that, you know, we get the permit, but we lose nothing. And I can tell you that we are in the business of building structures, not removing them. I have 30 employees every day that go home and want to come back to a job the next day hoping we're building structures. So we are definitely in the business of building them, not tearing them down. The company, the competitive advantage right now, as to the testimony that's been here today, is landowners are extremely knowledgeable about the permit system, about the codes, and things that have changed. And it's getting more and more difficult to negotiate leases. And I can personally attest to leases that have gone up 300%, 400%, 500%, and 600% on requests. I'm sure if the state budget was doing that today, that would be an issue for yourselves as well. It's a business decision. We aren't in the business of removing structures. The last thing I would like to just make everyone aware of is, you know, we've been operating under these laws and rules, my understanding, back to the Ackerley or to the Foster-Kleiser days, and operating wonderfully. We bought out in 2006 an independent company that were former employees of our company. So as it relates to being held hostage, I think that intellectual knowledge of our plant, I find it very interesting over the past couple of years that the only landowners that seem to have issues are those landowners that are dealing with prior employees of Clear Channel Outdoor. So I just want to make it clear that I'm open for comment or meeting with you individually and letting you understand that there are intellectual property concerns that we have as a company, that they know what our lease costs are. And it's a very difficult situation for us to be involved in. Thank you. Mr. Marimer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and member of the committee. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today and thank Senator George for giving the first two-thirds of my testimony at the beginning of raising the concerns that I was going to express and then addressing a number of them directly. I would very much like to continue or begin and be part of a dialogue with you. The concern that remains for us is the issue of just preemption of local authority. The city is in the process of looking into allowing non-conforming signs to be replaced under some circumstances and is aware of the existing issue and controversy that was expressed today. So we do think that we should retain local authority. We do appreciate the work that you're doing to narrow the focus, and I want to address the issues I had to the twos, and thank you and look forward to speaking with you outside of the chamber.
Mr. Barenberg, thank you for your testimony. As I was looking at your provision for signs and our brief discussion that we had with Senator or Commissioner Leonard today, you know, if your ordinance were to be modified where it says, you know, a sign or a sign structure may be removed temporarily to perform sign maintenance or sign repair or for new tenancy or at least an option to petition for new tenancy, even if it's not expressly implied, at least it would. I'm not going to, in all honesty, I cannot give you a value judgment as to this negotiation of really where, who's right, who's wrong, or if there is a right or wrong. But at least trying to ensure that whether our state law or local codes, at least provide an opportunity that doesn't in itself possibly provide a leverage, you know, either way, so that the two parties can have a fair negotiation, you know, I think is valuable. And I think what Senator George is trying to do here is to just ensure not more signs, not less signs. If there's a bad actor out there, at least not have the ordinance be a benefit for that. But we don't want it to be a detriment either to the sign company, but at least if someone had an option, maybe they had to make a case, but they had an option to do that, you know, that might solve any of those kinds of complaints. So Senator George will continue to work on his amendments and provide them to Mr. Stenberg as soon as they are there so that anybody can see those. This continues to be a fascinating issue, and I appreciate everybody's work on that.
And Mr. Chair, real quickly, and everybody who's interested in it, as soon as the amendments become available, you can either give them from the committee administrator, we'll give them to them right away, or they're available at my office. So feel free to contact my office, too, if you want them as soon as possible. And I'd like feedback as soon as possible, too.
Yeah, and one thing just to point out is that, as Mr. Stammers pointed out, we've been talking about the potential Dash 3. we don't know what dash it's going to be, because anybody can turn in an amendment, so it could be a dash 6 or 7, depending on who else may be wanting to submit amendments to the bill. But Mr. Stambridge will have the amendment that Senator George is talking about. So,
just one point, Mr. Chair, if I may, which is just the City of Salem asked me to share their concerns, which I think mirror those of mine and Mr. Slack's.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we'll close the public hearing, and we are adjourned.
Can we finish anything?
Yes. Yes.
Woo-hoo. Okay.